Welcome.
Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Manhattan, Kansas. We bid all of you welcome. Those of you who come with hope in your hearts, we bid you welcome. Who continue to find peace in our larger community, we bid you welcome. Who are seekers of a new faith, we bid you welcome. Who have entered our fellowship for the first time. Whoever you are, whatever you are, wherever you are on your personal journeys, we bid you welcome. And as is traditional at Unitarian Universalist fellowships and churches around the country, we begin our service by lighting the chalice. And I normally would have a child do this, but I didn't get... Oh, I have a volunteer from the audience. Maybe we'll have a chalice lighting. We light this chalice to acknowledge from whence we came, to cast light on today, and to set our hearts on fire for tomorrow. We'd like to begin this morning's service with a statement from Josh Wilson, who's going to be speaking to us from the Flint Hills Human Rights Project. Josh?
Good morning. As you said, on my phone. Okay.
All right. I don't know how. Can everybody hear me? All right. So, as you said, I'm Josh Wilson. I'm with the Flint Hills Human Rights Project, and we just wanted to come and say thank you to you all this morning for supporting the non-discrimination ordinance. And you were one of the few churches that that the entire congregation and as a body supported it. And so we just wanted to say thank you for your efforts in that regard. So thank you all very much.
Thank you, Josh, and for the work that your organization does, and to everybody. We have several announcements, some of which are printed on the third page of the program, so I won't bother to repeat those, but we have two other announcements this morning. Sarah, right here. We'd like to organize people who will come to the, we believe, October 25th. No? Okay, well, sometime in the future, the City Council or City Commission will be meeting to discuss the potential cutbacks to some of the social agencies that are currently funded by the city and may no longer be in the future. So if you have an interest in this area, which many of us do, please see Sarah after the service, and she'll get everybody organized. Another announcement is from Annelle, right here. You can see her after the service as well. I forgot to say, please turn off your cell phones before. Annelle would like to announce that she has some wonderful fresh pecans that can be ordered. I have a phone number, but I won't bother to read it because very few people have a way to write it down. But you can see Annelle after the service. The deadline is November 10th for ordering the pecans. So we'd like to open the service this morning with the opening hymn, number 119, and stand as you are able to join us in the singing of the hymn. Thank you.
Thank you.
Maeve. We're going to have a special reflection from Maeve to Nona.
Hello, my name is Maeve. My mom and I go to work at the Happy Kitchen. I like to go there and cook for the people who need it because it feels good to help. I also like going there because I get a chance to cook by myself, which doesn't normally happen at home. I help with the pancakes because I can't do anything else with the oven. I talk a lot in the kitchen with other volunteers, even though none of them are my age. So sometimes there was nothing to do, and then suddenly a whole bunch of people were waiting for an order. Some people were really old, and I was surprised to see that some were quite young, too. A lot of people leave with the second order, and it's hard for me to imagine that that could be their food for the rest of the day. I really want to keep going to the Happy Kitchen and be able to help more people.
Thank you, Maeve. This is the time in our service when we have an opportunity to express any joys or concerns that we are feeling, either personally or as a community. So normally, yes, we do have a circulating microphone that last week wasn't working, so we'll see if it works this week. Other joys or concerns?
Hi, Scott Tenona. I have a joy. Our family just went to the UU cluster for the first time this weekend, and we had a blast. Saw several people from the fellowship, some of whom are still there, I think, but we came back early for this service, and a bunch of other people from Topeka and Lawrence and Kansas City and Salina, and it's just a beautiful location. We really enjoyed it.
I have a joy of being here and having a good time coming here. My name is Shalasi Sipra.
I have a concern that my sister has a broken wrist.
Hi, Anna Franklin. I have a joy that I'm a member of a new exclusive club, the 99%. Thank you.
Others? Well, thank you for sharing the joys and the concerns, and for those unexpressed, thank you as well. Corey will now lead the children in a children's story, and at this point, I need Dick's help to move some things around.
Can we gather over on this side?
Going your way, Dave?
Well, can we do that with the... I don't know if the cord will let us go that far. It may have to go the other...
Oops. Let me see if I can...
Don't set your scarf on fire. Okay. Somehow this is going to be a river story.
There. Will that work?
Yeah,
that's fine. That's perfect. Okay.
Okay, I have to do a little setting up here. Just give me a minute.
I'd like to watch.
Okay, you're going to watch. So today we're going to play a game, and here's the game. This platform is becoming a river. So right now I'm getting wet. Oh, and you're getting really wet too. Okay. So I'm going to put down some stones for us to walk on to cross the river. Okay? Okay. Will you help me?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's put these down so people can get across the river. Okay. All the way over here, Owen. Yeah. Okay. Oh, okay, great. Okay. Oh, I think actually we'll move them down here, so they have to get all the way across, Owen. Okay. Here we go. Okay, so, yeah, that's great. Let's put that back down. You need to get out of the river. You're soaking wet. Yeah, okay. Okay, so if you guys want to line up, okay, we're going to try first to just get across the river. Hopefully we'll make it back, but let's at least try to make it across. And you can only step on the stepping stones to get across, because otherwise you're going to get really wet. So, Owen, are you going to demonstrate? Okay. There he goes. Keep all the way across. Oh. Yep. Keep going. Oh, man. It's getting tough. You did it. Good job. Okay. All right. Here they come. Whoa. Whoa, it's scary. Oh, you know what? This one sunk. Whoops. You can keep it, though. Why don't you keep it? Okay. Oh, you did it. But you know what? In the process, this one sunk. Whoops. Okay. You can keep that. Okay. Whoa, whoa, whoa. You know that big jump? This one sunk. Oh, whoops. Oh, it's getting tough. Whoa, he's doing it. He's doing it. Up. Oh, you know what, though? This one sunk. Uh-oh. Okay. Oh, he's doing it. He's doing it. Woo! Oh, this one sunk. Oh, no. Oh, no. Now let's just take a pause, okay? Only a few members of our group now have the resources, right? You guys have the stones that helped you get across. As athletic as I think you are, Maeve, I somehow think it's going to be tough for you to get from that stone to this stone. Is anyone willing to give up their rock? Now remember, you have to make it back across, right? You're going to have to make it back across the river. What if she sinks it? You're still willing to give it up? Look at this. Look at this. Oh, nice. Okay, we've put a couple more down. Oh, look at this. So nice. Now, what if when Maeve steps on it, you don't get that back? Well, willing to give up what you have to help her get across. Very nice. Okay, let's see if the rest of the group can make it across now. Oh, very good. Oh, here they come. They're staying strong. Here we go. Oh, yes. You did it. Okay, Ronan. Good. Oh, yes. Awesome. Woo. Crazy fast. Good. Good. Oh, yes. Good. Woohoo. It's good she had flip-flops on. All right. Oh, good. Okay. Jocelyn, you can do it. You can do it. Yay! So today, the grown-ups are going to be talking about how some of us can help other people. Maeve talked about going to Happy Kitchen. She did such a nice job telling us about her experience there. If we all give a little bit of what we have, even if it's a huge resource, like a stepping stone that would maybe make it difficult for you to make it across a challenging time, It helps so many other people. Look how many people are getting across the river now. You can go for it. Look at this. Woohoo! Okay, thank you guys so much.
This morning we'll have a presentation and a discussion from the Social Action Committee, and their topic is going to be putting your faith to work. Our first speaker will be Yvonne Lacey, and Stacy will follow up. So, Yvonne.
Does that make sense? Can I? Oh, I'm sure you can. Well, you can imagine my horror when I came in and saw my name up here as part of this presentation. I'm just the aged cheerleader for Stacy and the Social Action Committee. So it won't last but a couple of seconds. I just wanted to say, Sam and I were married in a Unitarian church in Denver around about 40 years ago. So I came into the Unitarians sort of by marriage, as it were. And I was lucky to find such wonderful people here. The only thing was that 40 years ago, it didn't look to me as though there was any social action going on. And then someone pointed out that I wasn't looking for it. And so I found out that many people were doing things. There were people who were providing safe houses for women. There were even people who were hiring the illegals as they came through to go north. I think it's safe to say that now, 40 years later. then I also found out that we were delivering commodities. We were doing meals on wheels. There were lots of activities that were going on that you just had to look for. And finally, I realized there was a social action committee, but it really wasn't very active. But I think that what we really started when the bread basket allowed us, and I do mean allowed us, to use their place as a pantry. And that really, to me, was a big thing that came on. There were a lot of people that worked there for a long period of time. I don't know whether it was any coincidence, but we were very generous with the food that we gave away and gave the people choices. And somehow or another, it was not long after that that the bread basket decided they really didn't have very much space, so we needed to move out and find some other place to do it. So that sort of ended our work there, which was really rather bad because it was something that everybody enjoyed doing. Then, by the way, we were selling fair trade coffee, so that was something, an ongoing activity that was going on. Let me see. We also had a Christmas collection for the shelter, but it wasn't very well organized. Finally, the Social Action Committee got everything moving, and the main thing that we started with after that was the Happy Kitchen. And as Maeve so beautifully pointed out this morning, it's something that is very enjoyable. It's something that we can all be involved in. For me, it meant, as it did with Maeve, meeting people, finding out that we all were in the same boat, enjoying the people that I was working with. That was great fun, apart from the fact that the pancakes were marvelous. Anyway, the thing that I really have to say, the Social Action Committee has grown over the years from people who were involved but not very organized, on and on, and now we have a very organized Social Action Committee that is made up of the young and the energetic and the aged who are not as energetic. So we have a pretty good mix, and we really do believe in what we're doing. And I think that one of the things that our committee has done is bring this group very close together. So I don't know how long that lasted, but that's long enough for me to just about wear myself out. So, Stacy, would you mind?
Thanks, Yvonne. I was wondering why you had the pom-poms. Now you've clarified it that you were my cheerleader, so. The following is an excerpt from a sermon that Scott Alexander preached on Fountain Street Church in Grand Rapids, Michigan, in January of 1995. I have a friend who traces her family roots back to the 17th century French Huguenots, a Protestant Reformation act whose sect, whose members, like those of so many other religious minorities of that time, were mercilessly persecuted by the established church. They were finally forced, those who had not already been killed, to free France altogether. The story about their escape, which has been orally passed down in his friend's family through all the generations since, is that her ancestors were jammed into a tiny boat and forced to row across the choppy channel to safety in England. But as they began to row for their lives, it became painfully clear that there was just too many people in the boat, and the boat would swamp if they all stayed in, and all would die beneath the cold waves. So faced with this question, what did the group do? Well, they could have drawn lots and thrown the losers overboard. They could have set upon the defenseless sick, young and elderly, and tossed them to a watery death. Maybe decide who were the least productive members of their community and force them out of the boat. I suppose they could have decided on any of those rational courses of action, but these beleaguered Huguenots, they did something else, something far nobler. Without any wailing or whining, the people in the boat decided they would take turns, several at a time, swimming alongside the craft. For the many hours of the crossing, as the swimmers tired, others would quietly and willingly take their place in the numbing waters. And thus it was that the small boat and everyone who had sought refuge in it survived the treacherous crossing. Scott Alexander was deeply moved by this story, for by a means of compassionate community-mindedness, a simple moral commitment to the welfare of all, based on their recognition that they belonged to one another, these Huguenots arrived safely on the shores of England and since have prospered down through the centuries. He believes that this story about all the members of a willing community to take their turn in the channel is a desperately needed metaphor for just how we Americans must learn to compassionately organize our common life if we as a culture are to successfully make the treacherous crossing into our 21st century. He offers that it is clear that America suffers from a bad case of humanity fatigue. For in these increasingly insecure economic and cultural times, we have as a people grown tired of caring for those least fortunate. We have grown tired of feeding the hungry and providing for the poor. We have grown tired of looking at the homeless and caring for the millions of Americans with AIDS and other disabilities. We've grown tired of protecting the elderly and the children who are neglected or born to destitute teenage mothers. We've grown tired of trying to fix the inner cities with all their unemployment, their poverty, and crime. We've grown tired of trying to rectify racial and ethnic discrimination and the cruel inequalities of our economy. We've grown tired of desperate immigrants pouring into America in search of a better life. We've grown tired of the hard work that a multicultural society demands. All the social symptoms are there. Our hearts are tired. We have a bad case of humanity fatigue. As a people, we've grown tired of the moral demand that we, like those Huguenots, take our turn in the channel. Instead of feeling our fundamental human connection with those who struggle to make it in our culture and economy, we are quick to dismiss, dehumanize, and even demonize those who are hurting, needing, and in trouble. Just listen to the mean-spirited, callous ring of the political discourse in the land. Because of the prevalence of humanity fatigue, it is now acceptable for politicians to describe the victims of our social system as perpetrators responsible for all of our problems. The poor and downtrodden of this land have become scapegoats for our growing anger, selfishness, and fear. Scapegoats comes from Hebrew scripture, where during the Jewish festival of Yom Kippur, they chose an actual goat to represent our sins, and they would send them out into the hostile, dry, barren desert to survive on its own. And that's not unlike what Americans are doing now with our own shameful sins. We're scapegoating those least able to defend themselves. We are pushing the poor and the desperate beyond the boundaries of our responsibility and concern into a wilderness of aggressive neglect. If our hearts continue to follow this punitive path, it will lead us to moral and social disaster. As a diverse and multicultural society, we cannot survive this aggressive indifference to millions who find themselves struggling in life. From our various political and economic perspectives, we can, indeed, we must disagree honorably how to precisely build a just society and care for all of our fellows. But we must once again agree as a national people to care consistently and compassionately for all. We must morally refuse the convenient illusion of separateness that would have us imagine ourselves somehow removed or different from those that are fighting to survive. Let there be no doubt about it. It will be hard work for all of us, for you and for me, to resist humanity fatigue. Because, you know, it's not easy day in and day out to feel genuine compassion for those in a close connection with all those who are struggling most in life. It's not easy to make room in our public and private hearts for the homeless, the hungry, the prisoner, the sick, the elderly, the chronically poor, and the unemployed. But like those endangered Huguenots, we must each find the wisdom willingly to take our turn in the channel, to sacrifice, share, and make room in the boat for all. Together, we must get about the holy business of building a nation built on mutuality, connectedness, and justice, where no citizen is willfully forsaken in the name of some abstract economic theory or calculated political expediency. Let us cure our hearts of humanity fatigue, healing ourselves to care once again for the whole of who we are. Now, Scott Alexander first wrote this piece in 1995, and for me, it's really, really sad that over 15 years later, all of these facts are still very relevant and timely. And then I started to think about myself, and you know, I admittedly suffer from fatigue of all kinds on a daily basis, and often that humanity fatigue that was mentioned. Now, I hope I would never think to draw lots in a survival scenario and happily toss the loser overboard for my own benefit, but I do know that I do not do all that I can to help others to survive and prosper and live without fear. It's so easy for me to look at myself with the old familiar mental narrative of being less financially and educationally advantaged as so many others, and I feel like I just need to focus on me. I can look at my house, if you've seen it, with its much-needed paint job, and it's got a falling-down fence, and I sometimes feel so sorry for myself and my circumstances that I blind myself to the situations of others. And, you know, I have to be reminded frequently how grateful I should be for what I have. Because that much-needed paint job is attached to a physically sound structure. The roof doesn't leak. The falling-down fence surrounds a large segment of land on a corner lot in Manhattan. And though I don't have an advanced degree or a six-figure income, you know, I have the option of three or more meals a day. I was born into a lower middle class Caucasian family, and I was born an American citizen. If that's not something to be grateful for, I don't know what is. And I've somehow managed to raise two daughters without a father figure. And you know what? They turned out to be loving, happy, and well-adjusted. And you know, it seems to me that that's being considered impossible, at least by our current governor right now. I, therefore, have lived and continue to live in a manner that some would consider overindulgent and opulent. And it is true that I am overindulged, and I am very, very rich if I compare myself to some of these recent statistics. According to the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, there were 643,067 sheltered and unsheltered homeless persons nationwide as of January 2009. These are the most recent statistics that I could get. Can you imagine what it is today? Additionally, about 1.56 million people used an emergency shelter or a transitional housing program during the 12-month period between October 2008 and September 2009. So if you crunch the number, it suggests that roughly one in every 200 persons in the U.S. used the shelter system at some point in that period. Can you imagine what's going to happen to those people and more if more and more communities adopt the ideology of not supporting social services? Even more sad is that the Census Bureau poverty threshold for a family of four, okay, four people, is under $23,000. And 15% of Americans live below that level. But you know what? They are stinking rich if you want to compare them to the over 3 billion people worldwide who live on less than $2.50 a day. With this lack of income, it's easy to understand why more and more people are accessing the food banks, kitchens, and assistance from social service agencies. And even worse is the knowledge that in many countries, as well as our own, many people are still going hungry and dying from malnutrition and preventable diseases. And then to exacerbate this situation is the fact that nearly a billion people entered the 21st century unable to read a book or even sign their name. Now, these are the easy-to-find statistics, but uncounted are the number of persons discriminated against each day based solely on their LGBTQ status, their gender, their color, their ethnicity, their immigration status, or religious identification. And you can add many, many more identifiers on top of that. So it's really hard to feel dissatisfied with my lot in life when I compare my existence to most of the rest of Earth's population. And it's also become apparent that I cannot wait for those who have the benefit of more education and more wealth or simply more clout to change the world. I may never make a wide-scale difference in my life, but it occurred to me that if we all take even small positive actions, it would exponentially result in massive change. Worldwide, society is failing its members. And therefore, socially conscious and caring congregations such as UUFM have many challenges ahead of them. Manpower alone is a hurdle to overcome in order to carry out projects of social significance. Historically, our Social Action Committee has initiated and maintained many projects with very few members and volunteers, and I am baffled by the amount of action that's been taken by so few. So it's kind of obvious to me that these social action people got some spunk, but they've also made it their mission to guide the congregation in identifying and carrying out social justice work, which supports our principles of justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. Now, some of the projects, I'll just do a quick rundown that the Social Action Committee at UUFM has already done so far, would be Helping Hands Sunday. We review applications every year, and we consider requests from a range of nonprofit agencies and associations. And by donating our collection on the second Sunday of every month, UUFM provides support to those agencies. And it also gives those agencies an opportunity to present to our congregation in purpose the mission of their agency and how their donations may assist their target population. Maeve talked about Happy Kitchen. And with Happy Kitchen, we're in a cooperative venture with St. Paul's Episcopal Church and Seven Dollars Catholic Church to provide free breakfast for low-income and homeless persons. And volunteers are very essential to that project. We serve the breakfast every other Friday, and there's three teams who alternate providing it. And it not only serves to provide the much-needed food to these populations, but it also gives us an opportunity to meet and to greet and to serve in person that clientele. It's an eye-opener that even here in Manhattan, we have those in need of meals on a regular basis. Unfortunately, we've seen an increase in the number of people served and the total number of meals at Happy Kitchen. That illustrates an increased need in our community. So really, 2.5 hours every 6 weeks of volunteer time is minimal to donate, even in each of our busy lives. We work together with Manhattan Alliance for Peace and Justice and other local organizations to establish the Flint Hills GI Rights Hotline in 2008. We provided the space and the support needed for the initial workshop, and we continue to provide financial assistance for ongoing counselor training, and we provide lay counselors to answer calls to the hotline. The Flint Hills GI Rights Hotline provides information and support to military personnel and their families about issues such as hardship or medical discharges, sexual orientation, or conscientious objection. We support the Manhattan Emergency Shelter by maintaining a collection box. And we gather requested items needed by the shelter, like personal care items, paper goods, and non-perishable foods. If you would like to make a contribution, there is a box that was decorated by the RE students, and if I'm correct, it's still in the narthex. If I'm wrong, please correct me. We collect soup for Super Bowl Sunday, and last year we collected over 211 pounds of food for the Flint Hills Bread Basket. I'm glad I didn't have to carry that over there myself. We support the Manhattan Living Wage Coalition that works to help ensure that businesses that receive economic development funds pay their employees a living wage. And finally, we also support fair trade products. And we sell coffee, cocoa, and other fair trade products every Sunday. And those sales help farmers earn a living wage and help support Unitarian Universalist service projects worldwide. Maybe not today, but pretty much every Sunday you can find Ann Cowan standing by that table. But unofficially and uncounted are the letters to the editor, the liaison activities with organizations such as Shepherd's Crossing, attendance at rallies and city commission meetings, and statements of conscience by our committee and UUA interactions. But even more impressive here at UUFM are the many individuals that aren't even in the committee who participate unofficially in social action every day through their donations to charities, their political involvement, recycling, eating sustainable foods, their volunteer hours, ad infinitum. And I am so proud to say that I am a member of such a caring and giving congregation. But unfortunately, there is always a need for continued social action and justice work. We have the wonderful opportunity to continue to be in the forefront of this work and to attract new members at the same time. One simple way is for all of us to identify ourselves as UUFM members while we are out there in the community participating in efforts of social change. Because many individuals, like myself, before I came here, I didn't know there was the opportunity to be involved in a group of such like-minded and truth-seeking people. So that way, if we identify ourselves as UFM members, each of us can, in fact, be a billboard of information of UUFM. I feel, as do members of our committee, that no project is really too small or too large to take on. An example of a small project that could turn into a big one is Betty Banner, who's knitting right now, sent out an email on the listserv. And it was about knitting projects where we could give the gift of a warm hat or a scarf or gloves to someone that doesn't have one. Now, these items have the potential to warm local people as well as even in faraway lands. And the response I've seen so far has been exceptionally positive. I myself would sign up to help, but I really don't know anyone that wants a twisted lump of knots to wear as a hat. And I really cuss a lot when I'm working with yarn, so my family would probably prefer that I don't take up the knitting project. But there's also been renewed interest in achieving our status as a green sanctuary. One tidbit of information is that if we complete this goal, we would actually be the first UU congregation in the state of Kansas to achieve it, which to me just sounds insane. We are also now collaborating with the RE program. And, you know, that is so exciting and promising as we work together to teach and involve our children in social awareness and responsibility. Then there's larger local projects, I guess. Such as the anti-discrimination law and ordinance. It may be too big for our congregation to tackle alone. I was really appalled to realize that we were one of only two congregations in Manhattan that supported that ordinance. So really, collaboration with other agencies and religious congregations is going to be a must. Sorry. I obviously didn't memorize it. For us to make that social change in a region like ours. But you know, I don't think that we need to agree on everything with others to work with them. I think we really only need to agree on the item in question. You know, looking at our similarities instead of our differences. Personally, I would like to thank members of the Flint Hills Human Rights Project for their continued effort in fighting this fight. Social action issues of global importance are also within the realm of possibility for our congregation. Because through participation with the UUA, we get the strength of UU congregations worldwide. Congregational statements of conscience are truly important because they speak for us as a whole. But keep in mind that those statements of conscience are made for and by the congregation as a whole. While the Social Action Committee can make, and we do make, our own statements of conscience, we would not presumptuously make statements for all of UUFM. There is a separate process for congregational level statements. Increased membership as well as volunteers are the fuel for these and future projects. New thoughts and ideas are needed and they're welcomed. To facilitate this need for ideas, we've put a suggestion box out in the narthex. For those of you that are not comfortable voicing out loud your suggestions, or maybe you just didn't think of one at the time. We have also, for your convenience, included an index card. That's what that blank piece of paper is in your bulletin today. And it's for you to write your ideas on. If you are comfortable, please put your name and your phone number on it so we can contact you about those ideas and how together we can put them into action. We will look at those suggestions and ideas at our next committee meeting, which will be, next month. I also welcome you to contact me or any of the other members of Social Action about any other thoughts that you have. Because our current projects, we've reached a level of sustainability, and it's time to move forwards towards other goals. Something seemingly so small as educating others, even on an individual level, to achieve social consciousness can make a difference. And it's amazing how people can change. Now, one example that is close to home is someone I know a while back. They made fun of people that sleep with dogs and any pet. And you know, you guys may not think much of that, but it really, really got me mad. But that's because I sleep with a little dog every night. But I am happy to report that now that person also sleeps with a dog. Now, it may be the same dog I sleep with, but he sleeps with the dog just the same. And you know, often with very little complaint. And I know that has nothing to do with social action, but it does, however, illustrate that people can change their attitudes and actions with some awareness and maybe out of love. One way to educate others about social action issues in our community is through the internet. Our committee is now able to blog on our UUFM website about current issues and projects. And they mentioned the city commission meetings. I do, beforehand, I get a copy of the agenda for every city commission meeting. And if I see items, or if any of you do, things such as cutting social services, anti-discrimination, things like that, they will be now posted on the social action portion of the website. So please check the web page regularly to stay in touch with that and with our other congregational activities. But you know, something so simple as even just sharing the UUFM webpage on your own Facebook will increase awareness. Other people will see it. Another way to educate the community is to individually write letters to the editor. If an issue has you outraged, use your pen to fight. We cannot continue to lose ground here in our own town simply through our silence. Social action can and will grow because more and more members of our community are being forcefully made aware of the bias and injustice that is present right in our own community. The only thing I can thank our local government for lately is putting a face on these issues. As our community continues to read of the plans that are being made locally, they are becoming more and more outraged. So the time for acts of love, justice, and compassion is now. To borrow a phrase that I hear regularly in this sanctuary, please stand as you are able. Stand for the issues that hit you in the heart and in the gut. Stand for those that can't stand for themselves, and stand to help battle humanity fatigue. I would like to finish with these two quotes. Martin Luther King Jr. stated that history will have to record that the greatest tragedy of this period of social transition was not the strident clamor of the bad people, but the appalling silence of the good people. And Margaret Mead said, "Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed people can change the world. Indeed, it is the only thing that ever has."
You're not done. Thank you very much, Stacy. Would you like to come up and field a few questions or lead some discussion? And if you have questions or if Yvonne cares to jump in, please do so. But I'll let you have the podium.
Sure.
Okay, Stacy, you talked a lot. It was a wonderful talk. Thank you. You talked a lot about how tired we are and some kind of fatigue. And I just want to say that the demonstration that was held last evening was actually quite energizing. And I also want to say that I coordinate Happy Kitchen and. You know, so I'm down there every 2 weeks getting things ready and making sure everybody's there that needs to be there. And I have to say that I get a lot of energy out of getting up early at 6:30 in the morning and going down there and wiping tables and seeing all these beautiful, dedicated people come down to make breakfast and to greet the people that need to eat breakfast. So you can get energy through social action. You can get a lot of energy and combat your people fatigue.
Stephen Mall here. I too was at the protest yesterday, or the rally, it wasn't really a protest, and it was great fun. It really was, and it's a great way to get involved and to show support and the presence in the community. And they've decided to do it again next week. I don't know if everybody knew that, from I think 5 to 7 Saturday at Triangle Park. And were you the one wearing the hummingbird pin last night? I apologize to whoever it was because I don't remember who it was, but somebody was wearing a hummingbird pin, and I commented how lovely it was. And she said it was in respect to a story that she had heard about all the animals in the forest fire, and they were all cowering except for the hummingbird, who was fighting the forest fire. And they said, "What are you doing? You're so small." She says, "Well, I'm doing what I can."
You want to
Okay. Okay. Yeah, there was a lot of energy at the rally, and people can find out about it. We're going to get a Facebook site or something, and they have one? Oh, yeah, we have the Facebook thing already. Yeah, Occupy MHK. But what I wanted people to be aware of today, you have an opportunity to act for social good because there's a birthday party for the Beach Museum. They're holding their 15th anniversary birthday party from 2 to 4. So if you just stopped by and said happy birthday and, you know, maybe made a little contribution or something like that, that would be wonderful because you know the arts have taken a hit as far as the larger culture goes, the government. So hope I see you there.
Hi. I coordinate the Helping Hands for the congregation, and I can remember when in the spring for our annual budget discussion, we wrung our hands over allocating $250 or $300 out of our general operating budget for social action. And I am pleased to see the growth of the Helping Hands contribution to the community. And it now stands at approximately $6,000 a year from that collection. And when you see the collection each month, you may not be aware of how much it has grown. Last Sunday's collection for the Crisis Center was $665. And for nonprofits, you know, that's a great sum of money. And I'd also like to make you aware that in February, we will ask for organizations in the community to make application for the funds. The application is a very simple, one-page little deal. We ask for organizations that have 501c3 status to to provide basic information about their needs and what they do to be considered for Helping Hands, and the information will be in the February newsletter. But if you're involved with or aware of an organization who should be considered, please keep those dates in mind. Thanks.
I think having Helping Hands, when we do that, the one Sunday every month, the thing that it does is it puts a face to the needs in the community. And to get back to what I was talking about is to educate others about what's going on and what we can do. Because I really don't think that this is the only group of people in Manhattan that reacts to those sort of needs the way that we do. So we need to get out there and we need to tell people. And then with Anna, you know, action builds inertia. Is that the right word that I want? I'm not into physics. But anyway, action builds energy and more action. So if you know, you can't just sit and wait for something to come along. You have to go out there and you have to find it, and you will get re-energized. I know that I have. The more I do, the more I seem to want to do. So, you know, hopefully you guys will react the same way.
Michael Littlefather, I want to say that by my count, there were 15 members of the fellowship last night at the event, and I am sure that once again we were the most overrepresented congregation in Manhattan in behalf of a good cause.
I'm Elke Lorenz. I just want to say it is okay to go in and out of our social action mode. Sometimes we take care of family members, or if we are public school teachers, we live social action on a daily basis, and it's quite okay to come here to get energy for our daily lives. We cannot all be involved in all the projects all the time, and that is okay too. We are aware of many things, and we go through different phases in our lives, so don't feel bad if you're not the most active person in the congregation, but maybe outside. Thanks.
Hi. This is a great lead to tell you guys what the PS MAP program is. Does anybody know? No. It's the program that you have to take in order to become a resource family, a foster parent. And I'm now a leader, which means that I can teach that class. And it's something that I'm incredibly passionate about. And I'll tell you, this program, it will change your life. So if anybody wants to do it, do it, let me know. I mean, even if you don't think you want to, or you're not sure, or maybe you have something to offer, take this program. It'll change your life, and it changes other people's lives.
I wanted to ask you, Stacy, if there's been a particular type of social action or charity that you've particularly done in your life.
Oh, in my life? I've worked a lot with children with special needs. That has probably been one of the things that's been closest to home for me, probably because I faced a lot of those challenges myself. I think that we often will identify with a certain situation, and because we have those heartstrings attached. But I would probably say that my next biggest cause that unfortunately I haven't been able to make a lot of strides against would be the anti-discrimination. Being friends and family to so many people that are in the LGBTQ sector, it outrages me that there is still discrimination against those people just for simply who they are, who they were born. That is one of the things that I would love for our social action group to be able to come more involved with as time goes on. It's going to take a lot of political steam and a lot of collaboration with other agencies. We're sort of just looking at that right now. But that would probably be one of my biggest loves, that and children.
Hi, I'm Kathy Hedge, and one of the things when I was listening to the sermon that you quoted from, I kept thinking, oh, man, that was 15, 16 years ago. Oh, my gosh, and we're much, much worse off now. And then I made the connection that I think the really big difference that has happened in social action is that there is a concerted economic support of anti-social action. And when I was a board member for the NEA for my district, and I went to the annual conference last year, one of the things that they shared with us is that the Koch Foundation, and I've told several of you about this, that the Koch brothers are running retreats for pastors. And they're all expenses paid in really nice places, and they bring in independent preachers. And they send the preachers back with two messages to tell their congregation, and that is that Jesus hates collective bargaining and Jesus hates regulation. And they're going back to the pulpit, and this is what they're teaching. And it is fully funded by the Koch brothers. So I think people are really paying to make us. They took advantage of our humanity fatigue and took advantage of it to get even richer. And I keep asking myself, will they ever get enough? And I think the answer is no.
Yeah, unfortunately, that middle-class family I was born into, my father is an avid watcher of Fox News. He's very conservative. And he told me before he knew that I came here, that any church that has social action in its programming, that they're communists. So I'm proud to say that I'm the only communist in my family. So,
I guess my remark is pertinent. I am one of those people that goes to City Hall and with very shaky voice and shaky hands actually speaks. And do you have any suggestions how we get through to these people? It's like facing a blank slate.
I guess frontal lobotomy's out, but I wish I had the answers to that. I do think that it's going to take pressure from many more constituents than what we have in this congregation, which is another reason why I thought that we need to put a face on what's going on to reach larger and larger populations, which is why one of the things I brought up was the social networking part, is the more people that we can make aware, you know, these politicians want to be reelected, you know, and hopefully that will never happen, but we need more and more people. We need more, I believe that we need more public comment, more letters to the editor. Unfortunately, I mean, the anti-discrimination ordinance, I don't know how long it's been since I saw a letter to the editor about that, even though Lawrence just put, transgender into their ordinance. But we need to keep it in the political eye. So I think it's pressure from in numbers. But I'm not a, you know, political analyst by any means.
Hi, I'm Barbara Bascom. I was involved with the actual birth of the Helping Hands program when we lived here before, and I was involved with Social Action Committee. So I'd like to congratulate you on your presentation today and all of you for how far this has come. I'm just amazed at how this program has developed and you know, gained so much momentum. I think the other thing I would like to say, having been involved in the humanitarian field all of my professional life, I really don't think that fatigue is the appropriate word. I think overwhelm is. I can remember in one of my darkest days in Romania, I tend to just kind of drop out and stop answering emails when things get to be too much. And I got an email from someone saying, are you having one of your overwhelms? And I think that in today that we are faced with such dire, serious issues regarding dehumanization
of everything and the elevation of the corporation to being people and people to being nothing. And I think that we are overwhelmed. There are so many needs, and they're so glaring that it's hard to organize, to get your arms around it and organize and focus or, and pick your battles. I think one of the greatest helps to me during some of our activity when we were in Santa Fe was UUA and their emphasis and their priorities on the social action and their wonderful, wonderful resources in terms of educational material, support, even grants, and so forth. So that's my comment. I think we're we can deal with being overwhelmed by working together.
There was someone over here, then Annelle, then Dave, you want to?
Hi, this is just kind of a random side note, and you may seem it may seem a little silly to some of you, but I went to Destiny's program on Thursday, and as much as I enjoyed the program, mostly because of the joy and pride on her face, but it was on freedom and equality, and it was all about how everyone in the United States, excuse me, is free and equal, and they're not. So I find it a little outraging that they're teaching our children that everyone is free and we're not. So.
Thank you. Annelle Forrester here. Part of our problem is that we did not vote in the last election locally. And as co-president of the League of Women Voters, we are looking for people to help us register people to vote. Our legislature and our governor are trying to keep people from registering to vote. And this is one of our big projects. And I think the main thing is we must educate the public of what's going on and to have people vote. People are getting tired. They say, oh, well, I'm not going to bother to vote if this is the way it's going to go. And if we have enough people with that kind of attitude, we're going to get worse. And the only thing is we have to vote these people out and get good people in there. Good people are dropping out. They're saying, I don't want to fight this battle anymore. They're seeing all this stuff going around, and it's just so unnatural and anti-human. And I'd love for a lot of you to join me in this fight. This is why I said I would be willing to be president of the League of Women Voters. So please join us. We can all fight together.
Perhaps I'm a bit of a Pollyanna, which Sybil would probably disagree with, but we do have to remember that we are living in a black hole called Kansas. And by reading the New York Times and the papers from Boston and the papers from Seattle and the papers from San Francisco, there are people out there doing good things. Now, there are parts of the country where people have their heads screwed on straight. So we can't be totally depressed. I think there are some right directions going on in this country. And then more of a local observation, it's interesting then when Jenkins comes to town, she has a town hall meeting, and when the Tea Party people get together, they have a rally. But the headline in the paper this morning was there was a big protest in town, even though it was, as Steve said, a rally that was duly, legally represented with a permit and everything else. It was a rally yesterday. It wasn't a protest. So, and as we'll have one more comment, and then we'll move along.
At the last count, I think I heard there were 200 people. First, there were 170, and people came and went. But I was really impressed by the good cheer that as we stood there and people, a lot of people honked and had thumbs up, and some people were sour and wouldn't look, and some people were a little antagonistic, you know. I mean, people who won't look when you have a sign for them to read, there's something going on there. But we have to keep our good spirit and our sense of humor about everything and not take ourselves too seriously. That's one of the things that takes you into a spiral. We do all feel overwhelmed at times, but go look at some art. Go listen to some music. Go to call your friend. Call your friend that you know thinks the way that you do. And, you know, when Stacy gave us the personal aspect that she did of, if you ever feel sorry for yourself, you know, it's kind of like one of those, you know, yank yourself by the chain and say, what are you thinking? Is that what you want to spend your time doing? You can get out of that real quickly. And the thing that Jesus was trying to tell us when he said, the poor will always be with you, was that as long as you don't have the spirit to give, you will have poor with you. When you change, you won't have the poor with you. You'll look at everyone with compassion and meet their need how you can. You know, you won't create enemies where you don't really have them. And we don't want to waste our energy getting angry and hating our enemies. We do have enemies, and I don't have the answer for how to do this. I struggle with it all the time, but I do know that I don't want to waste my energy hating someone. Thank you.
Thank you. That's an excellent program and excellent discussion afterwards. Let's stand as we sing the last hymn, number 127, Can I See Another's Woe? Go now in peace, and in the light of the chalice, set your hearts on fire. Please join us in the outside for coffee and whatever treats we have this morning. Thank you.